This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL, Kenai Soldotna, 91.9 FM. I'm Jenny Nyman, and it's time for the Kenai Conversation. Scientists have been scrambling for the last year and a half to wrap their heads around the risk posed by a potentially massive landslide on the steep slopes of Barry Arm in Prince William Sound. In a worst-case scenario, a full slope failure could pummel Whittier with a tsunami wave as big as 30 feet. State and federal researchers are working to get a better understanding of the size and factors that might cause the slope to fail to help tsunami forecasters give boaters and coastal communities in the Sound as much advanced warning as possible. Here today to give us an update on that research and modeling work is Ronnie Donnan, a geohydrologist with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, and Dave Snyder, Tsunami Warning Coordinator with NOAA's National Tsunami Warning Center. So, Ronnie, then maybe we can start with you, if you can give us a description of what we know about the potential landslide. Just since May of last year, the warnings first went out to coastal communities and boaters that there's this risk that we need to be aware of, and it seems like the scientific community really kicked into overdrive at that point, trying to wrap your heads around what you're looking at in that area. There's certainly been a lot of study done in the last year, and it seems like maybe a bit of a mixed bag. On one hand, the slide area sounds like it's bigger than initially thought, but on the other hand, maybe it's not moving as quickly or as much as initially feared. So maybe you can kind of bring us up to date on the current understanding of what's going on in Barry Arm.
Yes, I certainly can. So just as an introduction, I would just repeat the historic setting of Barry Arm, where a long time ago, these glaciers used to go, they were very tall and very high, and most of the mountains that we see today were covered by those glaciers, and they put a lot of force on the rock and scraping them and putting a lot of debris in the fjord and pushing everything out to open ocean. Since that time, we have lost a tremendous amount of ice on these glaciers. And that seems to be an ongoing process. So glaciers retreating, leaving mountains sites bare, and to fend for themselves, basically, against gravity. So particularly in the last 20 years, I would say, there was a lot of retreat in the glaciers in the area around Prince William Sound. And Barry Arm retreated almost a mile in 10 years. That is the slope where we are currently looking at. And so the first instance of what was found now, as you said, a year and a half or so ago, is that in the signature of satellite imagery used for creating the Arctic DEM, the researchers found that, in particular, Chin Yu Dai, I can never remember her exact name.
I think Chun Li, I believe.
Chun Li, there you go. Thank you. And so she discovered that there was a large discrepancy between two elevation data sets right here in Barry Arm. And that triggered a bunch of scientists to start wondering, hey, what's going on there? And very quickly, people realized that there was a large mass of the mountain just basically sinking down, sliding down into the fjord. And there was a very strong relation between glacial retreat and movement of that big mass. Now, fast forward to just a year ago, when we really started to gear up and started to look at this, we have managed to continue using SAR methods to measure movement on the slope that this landslide is on. And that indicated that over the summer, there was very little movement. We have collected in particular, we at DGGS collected two LIDAR data sets 2 months apart, roughly. And with a LIDAR data set, you get a much higher resolution than the satellite imagery can get. And so we found, after doing this twice at a 10 centimeter resolution, that there are indeed areas that are moving, and that the entire slope can basically be divided in four different areas that are moving. And it was confirmed that in the fall last year, that the big landslide started moving again, and but just not very fast. And so it was confirmed with the LIDAR that the bigger portion of the landslide was moving, but it wasn't anything compared to a new kind of feature we discovered that did not show up on the satellite imagery that is now named the kite slide. And the kite slide is an interesting feature. It's dangerous. It's high above the fjord, and it has a large volume. Maybe not quite as large as most of these tsunami-causing landslides, but still a large volume, somewhere around 20 million cubic meters. And its height above the fjord is about 600 to 700 meters. And the fjord at that location, just a little bit further away from the glacier, is actually a lot deeper. So all those things combined make it still a very worrying scenario. And I think that kind of summarizes the landslides to today.
And so there's a couple different areas then on that slope that you're now concerned that could slide. And I would imagine trying to understand how those would interact with each other. Is it possible just the kite slide area could go and the main slope could remain stable? Or if there's that much disruption on, say, the main slope, that could trigger the rest of the area to slide? Are you guys at the point where you can kind of start teasing those interactions out? Or are you still just trying to get a handle on the amount of mass that could potentially come down?
We are really close to figuring out the mass of these individual pieces, but the interaction of the two, like if one of them goes, does the other one go? Those kind of relationships, that's up for, you know, guessing, I guess. There is no science that can give us an answer to that, really.
Okay. Do you have a handle now on all of the potential areas, how much mass you're looking at?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the USGS has done an analysis where they tagged a number, or actually better said, a range of numbers to each one of these areas. And I understand that they also have a tsunami group at the USGS that did some initial calculations, but I don't know anything about that process. Maybe Dave knows more about that.
Okay. Dave, maybe this is a good time to rope you in then. What has your research looked like over the last year?
Yeah, really, really good lead in there from Ronnie. So, yeah, I think the most important thing to say leading off is that, you know, the landslide-driven tsunamis in Prince William Sound are not a new risk, right? This one is especially interesting and, you know, concerning because of its proximity to a population center, Whittier, and other communities in Prince William Sound, of course, would be affected as well. But Whittier, of course, is right there. So this has been really intriguing. As far as the research goes, I would say, you know, the USGS, the Forest Service, Ronnie's group, and, you know, other agencies came together really quickly to pull in some new bathymetry studies. So as part of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's group, we have a group called Coast Survey. And they're the folks out there in the big white boats that you'll see again this summer in Prince William Sound that are taking new bathymetry surveys and going up and down the coastline and all around. And what they're doing is finding the shape of the land underneath the water. And that is a huge part in determining, you know, how any tsunami wave is going to move through Prince William Sound. It would be the same if it was a seismic driven wave. And it's the same in this case, too. It helps us determine the speed and the volume of water that's available for a wave to occur. And so with the help of the USGS and NOAA Coast Survey, last fall, our groups were able to organize an effort to get out there and remap the Berry Arm as close as possible to the glacier itself, because that hadn't been done, I think, since the 90s. So, you know, really, really good effort in getting some new information rapidly into the system that's still being analyzed and peer reviewed. I'm not sure that that's available to the public just yet, but it's coming. And all that information is being put into the new modeling efforts from a various number of groups there to get the best data that we can. As Ronnie was pointing out, it's tricky to say how the earth and the water are going to interact, because the easy assumption is that all of it goes at once, right? And that's probably not going to be the case. You know, it is also possible that we'll have chunks fall off, or maybe it'll just slowly creep into the, we don't know, right? So that affects how much water is going to be on the move, because we don't know how much rock is going to be on the move. And so those are really tricky questions that we're trying to answer from all the directions, from all the groups that are involved.
And I would imagine that's a large part of, you know, the question you hear as far as mitigating the risk of the tsunami is like, well, can't they just trigger it like they do avalanches along the Seward Highway? Just put some cones up, no boats in the area, everybody in Whittier get X feet, and let's just bring this thing down. But as you're pointing out, there's just so much that's unknown and unpredictable about what might occur in Berry Arm. So trying to be able to do that, you know, quote unquote, safely. Obviously, a tsunami poses huge risks to life and property. So let's just get that one out of the way if you can respond to that, because that's the question that comes up anytime you're talking about Berry Arm is like, well, can't they just go in, explode something, and problem solved?
Yeah, we hear that a lot, actually, with all sorts of landslides, you know. With Berry Arm, unfortunately, it is not a solution. So first off, the tremendous size of this thing. So you probably, to move anything, you need a nuclear device, which is not very useful. And second of all, the landslide as it currently is supporting a much larger chunk of rock that is currently not moving. And so if we were to, in some magical way, be able to remove all that landslide debris, we just create another landslide. And basically, the whole ridge between the fjord and Cascade Glacier could potentially become unstable, because that Cascade Glacier is pushing against the whole ridge, and there's not a great deal of rock material there to, and the slopes are just tremendous, and the rock itself is not very competent. So worst case scenario, I think, for, in my mind, is, well, then we need to take that whole ridge away, Cascade Glacier will go away, and Berry Arm would go away, because that material will fall into Berry Arm. So that would be a really difficult endeavor.
Right. Okay. Going forward now, I know there's some more study work planned starting in April, I believe. So what's on the agenda for this season?
On the landslide side?
Well, sure. Let's start with landslide side.
We're planning to do more LIDAR, another at least one epic of LIDAR, probably two, to study the continuous movement of the various parts of the slope. We are going to install weather stations and soil temperature sensors and snow depth sensors, so we can get a better handle on the water that potentially gets in the rock and in the landslide material. Water, of course, being the lubricating factor for landslides, is a critical part, you know, for any prediction. So, and we all know that rain is very intense and very long in this area of Prince William Sound. And so getting a better handle on the amount of rain that the landslide gets, and the amount of rain with elevation, the amount of snow melt with elevation, anything to do with this amount of water that comes out of the sky, we need to try to get a better handle on, because this will help with any sort of prediction. So we can have these seismic sensors that give us maybe a hundredth of a second warning, you know, very, very short notice. GPS sensors could maybe give us a little bit more lead time, maybe hours, you know, where we see something starts moving. Oh, maybe now it's going to happen. But if we can tie in the amount of rain, snow melt, and the prediction time may go to a few days, and that would certainly help the situation.
Dave, similar question to you. What's your spring and summer looking like as far as study goals and working on your predictive models? And we also need to, at some point, get into the alert system for folks in the Sound as well. But maybe let's just start with what's on your agenda for this coming season?
Yeah, well, I'll start with what is available to us right now to know that something is occurring, and the answer is not much. However, there's been, you know, some very fast moving work. As Ronnie pointed out, there are two seismometers. One is on the slide and another is across the fjord there. And we are receiving some of that data at the National Tsunami Warning Center. And we're trying to establish with the other groups, what does that signal look like right now so that we know that a landslide is occurring? Because there's a lot of other things that are making the ground move out there, from normal seismic events that are small or large, to the glacier calving and doing its natural process. And, you know, if somebody lands out there in a helicopter, we're probably going to hear that on the sensor. The next thing that happened more recently was the Alaska Volcano Observatory, part of the USGS here in Alaska, put up an infrasound array in Whittier, and it's listening for those sounds from the landslide, a rock fall. A large rock fall could make a large enough sound that would be detectable. And that would give us about, after about 5 minutes, I think we would hear that in Whittier. This is something the ABO is really good at doing. This is how we monitor some of the volcanoes out in the Aleutian Chain and some of our remote parts of Alaska. They're really good at doing this, but we're also establishing that baseline for what are the normal baseline sounds now that we would expect to hear from Barry Arm and the rest of Whittier and Western Prince William Sound. And that takes time to understand what that signal looks like right now and then determine, okay, what's unusual about that, and is that a landslide sound? So that's kind of where we are right now. But in about a month and a half or so from now, late April, there's a really low tide cycle coming, and we're going to use that to install three water level gauges up there in Barry Arm. There's going to be one around, I think it's Point Durand is how you say that, and then about one midway down Barry Arm, and then one closer to the point where that moves out into Port Wells. And our idea is to be able to detect a rapid and sudden change in that water level and see that moving down in a cascading sequence. And that should tell us that something unusual and maybe catastrophic is occurring in that area. And that would allow us to send an alert through the National Weather Service warning system. It would hit your phones, it would hit the tsunami sirens and the communities there in Prince William Sound, and put everybody on high alert that an evacuation or a rapid movement away from the coast is needed at that point. So that's the next big step. There's probably a lot of other things that we can do branching off of that. But right now, that would really give us some added capability to start to understand some of the water level changes that could be possible. The one thing I do want to say about that, it's a really important cautionary statement, is we're not going to be ready to warn in late April once those gauges are in the water. We're going to have to take some time to make sure that we have those baselined and ready to go as well, and understand the information that we're receiving into our monitoring network at the Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer. So it is going to take some time, but it's a really important step in starting that process.
So as of today, with the capability that you have, how much warning time might Whittier or boaters in the area get? And then ideally, down the road, as you develop this baseline and as, you know, the instrumentation gets dialed in, how much warning time would you like to be able to provide?
Well, my ideal would be days or weeks.
Right.
And right now, we're we're nowhere close to that. And Ronnie really pointed toward the way that we're going to get there is through additional meteorological monitoring on top of the satellite overpasses and the groundwork that we're doing to understand what the land is doing. But being able to determine what is the triggering factor here and what is making the ground move a little bit more than usual or a lot more than usual, and giving us that lead time to be better prepared, because the problem right now is the math tells us that if a significant landslide occurred, that the travel time from Berry Arm to Whittier is about on the order of 20 minutes. And anybody that's got, you know, a handful of kids at home and a dog to grab and put in the car knows that moving quickly anywhere in 20 minutes is very difficult, right? And so that's my greatest concern, is that we're already starting at a huge time deficit to get people moving, to recognize that there is an event occurring, to issue a warning, to receive the warning, and to act on the warning, and then move to the right place. 20 minutes is just not a lot of time to do that. So anything that we can do to expand that range of time, which means understanding how that landslide is moving, to understanding how the triggers that are shaping up, especially if they're meteorological and weather, that's critical. And we do have clues about that, as Ronnie was pointing out. You know, Prince William Sound is one of the wettest places on the planet, especially Western Prince William Sound. These are some, you know, known risks to landslide movement of, you know, extreme water. And we can see some of those situations developing. And, you know, they've been key factors in some recent landslides as well in parts of Southeast and in Prince William Sound. So, you know, there's hope for additional information and clues there. But right now, our time window, especially with Whittier in mind, is really short. And that, you know, if there's one thing that bothers me about this, that's what keeps me up at night.
Right. And there's Whittier, obviously the community, but Upper Prince William Sound, Upper Western Prince William Sound is such a popular area for recreating, there's a commercial shrimp fishery out there, I believe. There's boats in that area because it's beautiful, right? I mean, look at Berry Arm. There's three glaciers that cascade down and meet in the middle, and it's a gorgeous area. So that draws kayakers and boaters of all sorts. So there's the usual, you know, you can get a message to your cell phone, and there's the sirens in Whittier, you know, radio options as well for boaters. But are the individual people who might be out in the area, are you thinking about ways to better inform them or warn them as this develops?
Yes, exactly. And this is, you know, as we get into summertime, of course, that traffic, the recreational traffic and the fishing traffic and, you know, the charter traffic, that's expected to increase. So we really want to continue working with the harbor masters and the boating community, as well as the Coast Guard and the Coast Guard Auxiliary, to make sure that we're getting the right message out to people in a way that they can remember to use that. Because when that alert comes, the response time is going to be extraordinarily short, especially if you're north of Whittier. And so right now, the best advice that we have, based on our, you know, our safety protocols and through the National Weather Service and the Marine communities, is move to shore as quickly as possible. Because while there could be a significant first wave, there could be several other waves after that. And we don't know how long that situation will go on, but it could go on for hours. And especially in some of the harbors there, that could mean there's a significant amount of debris in the water that could render your boat unusable. And it could make response and, you know, assistance from other groups, including the Coast Guard, could make that very difficult to come out and help you. So the best thing we can say right now is, you know, if an alert is received, to get up on shore, get out of your boat and move to higher ground. But we also know it's going to be a really tricky sell there in parts of northern Prince William Sound, because you're talking about some pretty steep cliffs, right? So this is a developing conversation, I think, with the boating community, is to establish some better best practices there for the people that know and use the coast, you know, like the back of their hand. They know that better than I do. So I'd really like to know from some of those folks, especially the harbor masters there, what can they do, right? What is possible? And then make sure that we've got that safety message dialed in tight and giving it to the right people in the right place at the right time, because it will matter at some point.
Okay. And for the alerts for the modeling of the tsunami itself, so you're saying there could be several waves. I guess first question, you know, in Alaska, when we think of tsunamis, usually we're getting those alerts because of seismic activity. Is there a difference in how tsunamis function when it's a landslide caused tsunami versus a seismic tsunami?
I think for the National Tsunami Warning Center, the difference is simply that we're not well equipped or equipped at all to monitor for landslide induced tsunamis. We are set up and designed to warn on a seismic signal, and then because of modeling and information that we have based on that setup, we can detect and warn for the broader oceanic coastlines across the world. For landslide signals, the wave works in a similar fashion, but knowing that it has begun or is on the move is the hard part.
And at this point, do you have any, again, modeling range of how high the wave might be in Whittier, for instance, or there are other communities in the Sound, of course, but Whittier's right next door. So I would imagine, you know, Valdez and Cordova might see some impact, but certainly less. What's the current thinking on, like, best case scenario, worst case scenario, as far as how, you know, large and how destructive a wave might be?
Right. I think that the size of the wave is the part that any of the groups that have been doing modeling have the least amount of confidence in, because that is directly tied to the amount of rock falling into the water, right? And if we don't have a good gauge on that, then we can't really say, you know, definitively, yes, there will be this much water approaching the coast. With that said, one of the initial models there by Dr. Pat Winnett, California, suggested that there could be as much as 30 feet of water in Whittier, and that would be the extreme catastrophic case. I think and Ronnie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was based on the entire mass of the water, the entire mass of the rock falling into that water. Since then, we probably have, you know, maybe a slightly better idea about how much rock we're dealing with. And I think we have a better idea of some of the bathymetry. And so all those numbers are still being reviewed and rerun in some of the models. We've done some preliminary work at the National Tsunami Warning Center based on that. But I think the thing that we're more confident about is the time, right? And I think about 20 to 22 minutes from the time that a landslide would hit the water to arrival in Whittier is about what we're looking at there. And you mentioned some other communities as well. So, you know, 30 feet of water in Whittier would be the extreme catastrophic case. And using that same information, I believe Dr. Lynette came up with about 1 meter or about 3 feet of a change in Valdez and some of the eastern Prince William Sound communities there, including Tetitlik. Cordova would see the least amount of impact, I think, from higher water. And Chiniga would also be a community we're keeping watch on, and that would, I think, be about a 2 to 3 foot water level change there. Probably the more notable impact outside of western Prince William Sound, away from Whittier, away from Port Wells, would be the long and strong currents that would be found in places like Valdez and our eastern Prince William Sound communities. That could be really tricky for boaters, especially recreational boaters that aren't accustomed to the sudden changes in the water conditions like that. And it could be just as concerning for larger vessels, including some of the oil tankers moving in and out of Valdez. So it's really important to understand that it's not just one wave. In fact, it could be several waves, and it could go on for hours, especially when you consider those long, strange, and unusual currents that could be part of that whole process.
And as you mentioned before as well, debris in the water, I would imagine, is going to be an issue throughout the Sound.
Right. So
how much interest, maybe that's not the right word, how seriously do you feel like people are taking this? Would you hope to see maybe more caution or more awareness of this? You know, Alaskans on one hand are a pretty hardy bunch and like to think, I know what I'm about, I'm fine, it's fine. Maybe a little more caution might be warranted.
Yeah, you know, I think it has been taken seriously, and I will take my hat off to the community of Whittier, the government folks there, the emergency management folks, and the community has been very responsive to this. community efforts are ongoing to make sure that communication is reaching the right people in the right way. And we've been working with the community of Whittier since we first learned of the threat and branched out quickly to try and find the other communities in Prince William Sound, and Valdez is certainly working hard with us on this as well as Chenega. So if there is a community in Prince William Sound that needs more information, by all means, let's kick this into high gear and get you what you need right away. But yeah, that is the other side of this, Jenny, is that, you know, the risk, it's not new. This is a new understanding of a current risk that's always been there. And I imagine that's a difficult situation to wrap your head around, because how many summers have people been going to this part of Prince William Sound and gazing up at the rock and the glacier and it didn't fall on them, right? This is the same thing that we deal with when we're talking about flash flooding in other parts of the country. People drive the same stretch of road every single day and they've gotten to and from work just fine every single day, until that time that they don't, because they cross the flooded roadway. So the perception of danger and risk to each individual is something that, you know, the individual's got to take upon themselves. But what we're doing is trying to make sure that all of that decision-making information is there in every community, at every point where they have to make a decision about, is this a good day to go? Is this the right direction to go? And is this how I want to spend my day, knowing the risk and the danger that could occur that day. So I'm happy, and I know many of the other agency groups are happy to support that information process there. Part of that is coming up here in June, the Prince William Sound Resiliency Council, as part of the state of Alaska's efforts to improve emergency management information to the communities. There'll be a large effort on tsunami awareness and preparedness in June because of that. And you know, even prior to that, there's probably going to be more Barry Arm community talks, whether they're in Whittier or any other part of Prince William Sound, but we're 100% ready to support that.
That is Dave Snyder, Tsunami Warning Coordinator with NOAA's National Tsunami Warning Center. You're tuned to KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman. This is the Kenai Conversation. We're talking about the landslide and tsunami risk in northern Prince William Sound. Our other guest is Ronnie Donnan, a geohydrologist with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys.